Welcome to Thursday. A little talk around going here. Busy Thursday at that, man. A lot of people to talk to today. We're going to kick things off with our favorite historian, Jana Gageland. Good morning. You always chuckle when I say
that. Well, I do because it's really... I mean, I love history, but
You do love history.
But I don't know if I'm a historian.
Yes, you are. It's the way you tell the story, Janet. So it makes you a classic historian.
Oh, okay.
We got a part two.
Part two.
Going on today. Mm-hmm. Tell us about this.
Well, if you remember last week, we talked about the bank robbery in Abercrombie and how the Gang of Five got away.
Right.
Made their destination, their next robbery was going to actually be in Minot, but they stopped in Kenmare, and you know they were kind of living it up, and they had, you know, stolen things from the store in Rugby, so they were they were kind of well known,
but not real good at covering their tracks.
No, yeah. they got captured in not a very short time.
Yeah,
so they're in the jail now in Minot or Ward County, and Whitey was wanted in British Columbia. And he did not want to go back there because they have a really tough prison.
Mm-hmm.
And they would do lashes, whippings.
Wow.
And so he knew of that, and he didn't want to go there. So he was doing everything he could to not go there, as well as, you know, Devil's Lake Red. But so he made a deal with the marshal, the sheriff's office, so that he could stay away from having to go to Columbia. British Columbia. So he was going to, the deal was that he was going to tell them where the rest of the money was.
Okay.
And they're like, okay, we can make this deal. So they make the deal and then they think, okay, well, we have to take him to Rugby because that's where this is all going to begin with mm-hmm. that burglary. So they take him and Devil's Lake Red to Rugby. They're in jail for, oh, maybe a day.
Yeah.
And they had some kind of a saw blade. Okay. So they sawed their way out of the jail and escaped, and so they're gone. But we're going to next week cover the rest of their
So story. They were loose in Rugby for a while.
They were.
All right.
They left that area.
They got
area.
Out of that. Yeah, I'm sure.
And, of course, in those days, South Dakota was a tough state. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of crime going on. So I'm sure they headed south.
Right.
But we'll
probably
find
had
out.
Friends, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, gangs, they kind of stayed together.
Yeah.
So
offices.
We'll cover the rest of Whitey next week.
What a great story.
Yeah. He's
a three-parter. I love it.
Yeah. The ending is going to be a good one, I'm sure.
All right.
Just a little hint. All right. So in 1924, this is June of 1924, the newspaper said that bathers were formally opening the season at the junction of the Boitie Sioux and Otter Tail Rivers. In Breckenridge, on the Breckenridge side. So, you know, there's that land, that boat landing?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so that was also a bathing site.
Really?
Yes. So people would drive over in their vehicles with their suits on and then bathe on the hot summer days, like right in the river there.
Wow.
And if they weren't dressed, they would go to the fairgrounds and use some of the buildings there and so they would bathe there. Well, the article says we can, you know, sympathize with these people. Let's do something for these young people or however old they were.
Just people.
Yeah. So probably a decade or maybe a little bit less, Wahpeton said, hey, we got to do something. You know, the Red River kind of made a loop through Chehinkaba Park,
yes.
which they called Horseshoe
mm-hmm.
because of how it made this horseshoe-looking thing. So they built a swimming pool, or a swimming hole, they called it, in that area. They used timbers for the sides of this and rock, and on the bottom they put gravel, bricks,
okay.
and it became then a swimming hole. They built a little deck around it, and you know, so it became another place that bathers could go.
And this was down at the... what is now the confluence of...
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. And then in the wintertime, of course, it was flooded over and it became ice, so then we have an ice skating rink, too. So they...
Dual purpose.
Yes. But, you know, then the work began to, you know, let's get some concrete-type pool here mm-hmm. for the people rather than,
sure.
you know, planks or... I imagine 4x4s on the side, you know, probably really rough, you know. I'm like,
for sure.
Yeah.
That is fascinating, the history of bathers in Wahpeton.
Yeah. You know, remember the frog story?
Yes.
All right. Well,
quite well.
People remind me of that one all the time, but they don't sell frog legs anymore at Econo, just crab legs. But it seems like the state of Minnesota now is after fishermen.
Really?
Yeah, because it says they spread a net by the Minnesota game wardens, and they were trying to apprehend non-resident fishermen.
Mm-hmm.
So they set a trap just a couple miles west of Fergus, and they stopped all of the cars that were not Minnesota, because they wanted to catch them for maybe having too many fish.
Yeah.
So they pulled over 15 cars, and they only got two that were not in compliance. One had too many fish, and one had it's called tagging. Now, I don't know, how do you tag a fish? If you tag it and you catch and release, that's maybe different than tagging. I don't know.
Tom Schmaltz, how do you tag a fish?
I don't know. They tag them in their dorsal fin, but I don't know what they did back then.
Yeah, it might have been a whole different process.
Right, and I couldn't find any explanation of that other than it. You know, a YouTube video on how to tag a fish behind the eye. I don't think that's what they did.
Probably not.
Yeah. So, anyway, that was pretty good. You know, we only had two out of those 15.
That's not bad at all.
No. Compared to the frog legs, that's a
And big... that's still kind of a problem today for the game wardens.
Yeah.
Looking at people from out of state going, well, number one, you don't have a license.
Right, and then you have the muscle zebra?
Zebra mussels, hauling that around.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a lot.
Sure.
So we'll give them a little break today.
Okay.
Did you know that we had a camping site in South Wahpeton?
No.
Well, the fairgrounds would have been... let's see, what's in that area now? The school bus barn.
Oh, sure.
And I think Comstock has a building.
Building there, yeah.
Yeah, so that would have been the area of the fairgrounds.
Okay.
And there used to be Swift, I think, had a meat place there for pork, and they buy and sell. But anyway, that was the the fairgrounds, and right alongside of that was a camp or a place where people, tourists, could stop and camp. And so they're trying to make it look really nice. They have oil stoves.
Wow.
An ironing board.
Pretty high tech.
Yeah, ironing board, minor cooking utensils, and clean tables. So they had these little building things. You could rent that, or you could, you know, camp.
Sure.
They were kind of missing a bathing place. But
they just go down to the river down the road.
In 1923, all of the stuff was pretty much taken. People just walked in and took what they wanted. And so in 1924, they made it a little more welcoming, and so that was the only thing missing at the time was a welcome mat. We have talked before about the tent circus monument, you know, in Riverside Cemetery, and I think that happened in 1897 when that big storm came, lightning struck the pole, and they were putting up the big top. And
Ringling Brothers.
And three members of the circus team were killed by the lightning, and so they buried them at Riverside Cemetery. And ever since that time, this is from 1924, even to that point when the circus came nearby, whether it be in Wahpeton or Fargo, they always came down and paid tribute to those three who were struck by the lightning in that particular year.
How nice is that?
And then one of the priests from the St. John's Church would join them. And they would bring flowers, and they would have like a little celebration, you know, of these three individuals. And they probably never even knew them.
Sure.
You know.
What a nice tribute, though.
Yeah, very nice. I thought that was pretty cool.
That is fascinating.
Yeah, and it says, who sleep the sleep that no one is waking. So, okay.
All right.
All right.
Take that for what it's worth.
Yeah. Got one more?
Sure.
All right. Lake Elsie by Hankinson.
Mm-hmm.
A good fishing lake, I think, now. But in 1924, they were going to do something to make it a good fishing lake. So they dropped in 1,500,000 small walleye perch.
Wow.
Or walleye pike, I guess they are. So that it would, in 5 years from then, so like the late 20s, early 30s, they would be able to do a lot of really, really good fishing from that lake. So I thought that was
that is fascinating, too.
They found that Lake Elsie was an ideal home for fish of the pike kind.
Okay. Good habitat.
Yeah. So there you go.
Fascinating. I love it when you dig around and come up with kind of this, you kind of piecemeal things together. I love this.
It's like a potpourri of history.
It is. It really is. Yeah. But boy, you have a knack for finding that.
Well, the front page is always good. Sometimes you got to get back to page 7 or 8. But
all right. So next week, what is our topic?
Next week, well, I've still been working on the golf course. I'm getting a little more information on that.
But okay.
There's really nothing written, so that might take a little bit of time, but I really want to throw that out there because there are some fantastic things that people have said about when they started the golfing. And anyway, we'll finish up on Whitey.
We'll finish up on Whitey. I'm looking forward to the end to this, too. Janet's three-parter. I love this. Janet, great to have you in here.
Good to be here.
Thursday, and look forward to our report next week. Talking Wahpeton History with Janet Gageland, one of our favorite segments. Another one of our favorite segments, Morning Zoo with Tom and Kathy, is up next.
Welcome to the Radio Employment Connection, where we work to find people to work.
Are you ready to join a growing team? Red River Communications wants you. They're seeking a skilled outside plant technician to help build and maintain their broadband network. Install, splice, and repair fiber optic cables while enjoying excellent benefits. Apply today at redrivercom.com/careers.
We're growing and adding a product support specialist at our Castleton branch to support our customers with their product support needs. This person will be responsible for providing product and program support for inside sales personnel, dealers, and more. Visit unverfirth.com/careers to apply. The best employees aren't scanning the want ads, but they are listening to their favorite radio station. In fact, radio reaches over 88% of adults who say they're likely to change jobs in the next year. Give us a call and let us help you find your next great hire.
To advertise on the Radio Employment Connection, call 833-917-4130.
You want to feel important. You want to be part of something bigger, something that matters, and that you can help change things. You want to feel like you belong. We felt that way too. I'm Sergeant Michael Tislin from Chaska, Minnesota, and that's why we did something about it. We aren't just Minnesota Army National Guard soldiers. We are people just like you, and together, we can make a difference. Take on your legacy. Visit NationalGuard.com/MN to find out more. Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard.